Welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com, at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. You go to Facebook, and in the search bar, you type The Matthew Aaron Show in, and you'll hit enter, and then you'll click like, and you'll get all our updates and all the gossip on
the latest
on The Matthew Aaron Show. We're on Stitcher, which I was actually listening to a lot of Stitcher last night. You can hear our shows on Stitcher, as among many other podcasts as well. Some very good ones on Stitcher, so I do suggest checking out Stitcher. On iTunes, please leave a comment or a rating if you want. If you don't, I don't really care about that, but I think the numbers people care about that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't really care about it, though. And by the way, welcome to The Matthew Aaron Show, home of your favorite video on demand stars and directors. All right, that's all I got. Lee
Capreas, hello.
Yeah, Lee, how you doing, pal?
Okay, I'm better
you
now.
You and I've had great mornings.
Boy,
huh?
We have had quite a day. Well, can I tell you, I did something funny
because
I was having the worst day and I was going to take it out on somebody. I'm in line at the library.
Yeah.
And this little girl with her mommy in front of me, it's like two brats, and she keeps messing with the. This is horrible, by the way, what I'm about to say. She keeps messing with the turnstile thing with the nylon connector
right.
that you see at the airport, and the mom's getting madder and madder. Stop it. I said, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. And I did something. She's pulling on it, and I pulled on it myself behind the mother's back and knocked one of the turnstile things down. The mom didn't see me. But, of course, because the girl had her hands on it, it was the girl's fault, and she spanked her. I got the kid in trouble. And let me tell you something. It was fucking great. It was so...
You were just happy to see a kid finally reprimanded in the store instead of left to run around like a zoo animal.
I didn't hurt that kid.
No, but we've talked about it on the show before how discipline's a lost art.
Yeah, it is. But that, like, the day I was having was so bad. That brought me some joy.
I'm very excited about today's show. We got Brian Dietzen, and you remember Abby Miller, of course.
Yes, Abby.
Who's fantastic on Justified.
Yeah, and Dreamy.
Yes. As you know, one of my favorite shows, Justified, and we had Abby on last year, I believe. It's been a long
time. That was our Hotties of Hollywood week.
Well, Abby and Brian did a movie together. They wrote it. I mean, yeah, it was our Hotties of Hollywood week.
Yes.
Yeah. And Congratulations is the movie, and we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about NCIS, which the new season premieres in September. And but before we get to that, I do want to let our listeners know, we got some huge shows coming up.
Yeah.
If I can get a computer to do them. So I went to Apple because they screwed up my phone. They sent me a bad phone that had hardware problems. I don't know how brand new phones have hardware problems. By the way, did you see a Chinese woman today died when she answered her Apple phone? Supposedly it was plugged in, it was charging, and it shocked her or something, killed her.
Mm-hmm.
Killed her. So they're investigating it now.
Yeah.
So for all you Apple iPhone users out there,
put your phones down, take a look around you, people.
That's right. Live a little.
Live a
Be
little.
One with nature, Brian. Be
talk,
one with nature.
Talk to another person today.
Speaking of be one with nature, yeah, I'm supposed to go camping soon. I'm excited about that. We'll
camping.
Talk about that some other time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was an interesting... I had a very interesting night the other night.
Getting are you getting...
What?
In your headphones?
Am I getting anything in my headphones? I get you.
In and out, cut it out?
I get you in my headphones. All right. That's all that matters.
In and out. Okay.
As long as I can hear you, Lee.
Yes.
That's all the people care about. So we have some big shows coming up.
Yes.
So I take my computer into Apple, too, to get it fixed. And they've had it for 2 days, and they call me today. After I called them, and they had me on hold for an hour. The customer service at the store is fantastic. Apple customer service, period, awful.
Right.
Awful. They had me on hold for an hour, and during that hour, they told me I was just 3 phone calls away from being answered, like, for an hour. So it must have been the longest 3 phone calls ever.
Yeah.
And they finally call me back like an hour or two ago, and they go...
At the third playing of Feels So Good
right.
by Chuck Mangione.
Oh, no, they had really bad music. Yeah, it was not Chuck Mangione quality,
oh.
all right? they said they're sending my computer up north to, I'm guessing, Apple in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
And I will have it back anytime between the hours of Wednesday and next Wednesday.
Yeah.
So they gave themselves some good buffer room there to fuck around.
They sent it up north like it was going to be like where slaves are free. Like it's up in north, up in the north, in the Yukon.
There's only two possibilities of what's wrong with my computer. It just needs new RAM sticks or the hard drive's messed up and they replace the hard drive. Each thing takes less than like an hour to do.
Yeah, I got you.
So
I got a RAM stick for those people.
I don't know why it's going to take an hour, but it's going to take an hour. So I got to figure out now Friday... I'm interviewing my arch nemesis, which will be on the show next week, Jeff Garlin. I believe David Koechner's on the show next week.
Two-time doppelganger of the show.
So we're going to hit... Yeah, right. Garlin.
Well,
we could talk about that. Well...
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Well, for those who are wondering why I say he's my arch nemesis, Garland's been on the show twice.
Yeah.
Both times, I think, under duress. I don't think he's a big fan of mine. But then he requests a one-on-one interview.
Right.
I don't know.
Go back and listen to the two interviews we did with Garland if you're wondering.
They're fascinating.
We're not going to explain them to you.
They're fascinating.
They have a tone to them that's distinctive.
The one time he, I think, only came on the show because he saw a microphone and wanted to talk.
Right.
But he didn't really care that we were there.
Uh-huh.
The other time, I think he only came on the show because John Landis was hanging out with us and he wanted to like rub elbows with John Landis.
Right.
So I think you saw John Landis, which, by the way, you did a great job interviewing John Landis for me, Jeff.
Yeah.
but Garland's back. I go see him Friday, one-on-one.
All right, well.
Yeah, it's like one-on-one in a bunker somewhere in L.A. I don't know. And then David Koechner next week, and then Pat's working on some other things as well.
Big things coming up.
I can't go to Comic-Con now because I got to interview Garland. Garland, I'm skipping Comic-Con to interview you.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Because I just got offered a free ticket last week.
Okay.
For all 4 days.
I
and a place to stay.
I think I could imitate your signature hairstyle and and voice.
You should go.
All right.
I was supposed to go with some friends of mine. Okay, but all right. So is that Bruce Fretz calling in already? Brian knows Bruce Fretz. Long time fan of NCIS Bruce Fretz. He claims he's a journalist.
It's true.
But really, he is just a homer for NCIS, which, by the way, is a great show.
I'm so happy he's a homer for NCIS.
Listen, my mom's a homer for it. Everyone loves the NCIS.
I hear that so often. My mom loves your show.
I do not watch all 22 episodes a year. I'll be completely honest. However, when it's on, when I'm on an airplane or I have nothing to do and it's on, I have no problem watching it. It's not a show I sit there and I go, like, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a fun show. It's just one of those procedurals on CBS that you don't have to follow every week, really, to get.
Yeah, yeah. It's built around the characters. It's not built around, like, some serialized storyline that you must follow each week. I love those shows, too.
Law and Order, SVU, I like. Yeah. But then, there are shows you got to watch every week.
Yeah, like Breaking Bad coming up. I cannot wait for that.
It's best show ever.
Can't wait.
Best show on television. It's so good.
Terrific.
But then there are shows like NCIS where we have some cool serialized stories that run throughout.
You do.
But it's not as though you have to watch every single show in order to be caught up. That's why we blew up when it came to USA Network. You know,
right.
They're doing those 13-hour, 14-hour marathons.
Is Bruce on the line?
We are live at Taste Chicago in Burbank, 603 Hollywood Way.
Thank you, Lee. Yes. And what's your favorite thing you get at the Taste Chicago?
Arlene Montaigne. I am partial to the stuffed shells, but you get a nice Maxwell Street Polish. That's not bad either.
I'm looking for a meatball in a cup over here.
They got Joe's half and half. Joe Montaigne has his own sandwich, of course.
Yeah.
I got to ask Joe about this next time he's in. I'm shocked he's not here pimping Criminal Minds while NCIS is in there.
Right.
I love Joe.
This seems like the perfect time to get like CBS homerism going on.
That's right.
By the way, if you're going to be a homer for a network, CBS, they're number one.
Yeah, you got kind of rooting for the winner there.
I love Les Moonves. Leslie, big fan. Joe's half and half, though. This is fascinating to me. It's literally half a sandwich of beef and half a sandwich of sausage, not mixed together.
Right.
For some reason, that seems very Montaigne to me.
Yeah, if you're in Chicago and you're at an Italian beef joint and you get a half and half, it's a whole sandwich.
I just imagine Joe went to Portillo's and was like, I don't know about this combo. You know, just split it up. Just do half beef, half sausage. What if I want half beef, half sausage? I don't want it to mix.
That way, if people are on a diet, they'll be all
right. Yeah, right. So come by, get the Joe's half and half, get the mini deep dish, which is great. I suggest getting the mini deep dish after 8 p.m. so you can zonk out for a good 12 hours.
You will be.
Do not hit the gym after. Do not hit the gym after the main deep dish. And by the way, the Montagnes don't want you to hit the gym after their food. They don't want you to. They don't want you going to the gym. They want you to get fatter and come back for more.
Because your eyes will be glazed over.
Josephine told me.
Don't operate heavy machinery.
She goes, we don't want to do diet food. I go, you shouldn't do diet food. Right. I get the chopped salad here, which is diety as it gets. And I'm sure it's under 500 calories. I'm not that sure.
What makes you say that?
I'm not that sure.
I don't know about
I'm not that sure.
It's only a hype.
So, Brian.
It's Chicago.
Talk to me about congratulations.
Well, congratulations. You mentioned earlier Abby Miller and I.
Who's phenomenal.
She's fantastic. Wonderful actress. Wonderful person. We were working on a script, a story for a script, and it was a musical. And she went to Sundance a few years ago. She came back and said, we should abandon this musical thing because it's going to cost too much money to do and write something that we can produce ourselves. Like, she's like, I saw stuff that was, I mean, frankly, they're pieces of shit for like $7,000, $10,000. She said, if we can raise a decent amount.
At Sundance, she saw like $10,000
movies. $10,000
movies. Did they get picked up?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, probably.
What a player hating. I like it.
But she said, you know, but we could write something that's actually good.
Yeah.
And but with a modified budget, you know, maybe a little bit more than $10,000. And so we decided to write a movie. And the advice we got from everyone was to write from what you know. And so I'm married. I have two kids. Abby is happily in a relationship, but not married, and I'm not sure that she wants to be.
She talked about her relationship on the show. Yes, very
said,
happy.
So let's write about two characters who have these very disparate views on what marriage is. And so basically,
which is always a great topic.
It's fun, yeah.
Because everyone always debates over where their marriage is good or bad.
Exactly, especially with this generation, where I mean, let's be honest, it's not really a huge priority. And people aren't graduating college saying, "I got to get married right away."
Right.
People are saying, "I want to." Career and I want to have fun.
I'm turning 30. Yeah. I've never even really thought about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. No. We'll cross that bridge later.
Yeah.
And so you put a guy in the room with a girl. A guy says, I want to marry you. And she says, why would you want to ruin this? You know, she sees the marriage as the ending point, and he says sees marriage as the ultimate definition of love. And you see how the definition of marriage can really tear these two apart instead of bring them closer together. So
I like that.
It became a really great conversation piece, and we brought on Eric Levy and Juan Cartarelli. Juan's sitting right over here.
Juan, how are you? Good.
and they said
Juan directed the film.
Juan
right?
directed the film along with Eric.
Okay.
And they said we'll direct as long as we can all write it again together.
Okay.
So the four of us.
Has Juan had his opinions on marriage?
He did. They're very distinct. I'm saying lots of Juan lines in this movie.
Yeah.
And so it was great. We the four of us wrote as a foursome. They directed it in tandem. And we got a bunch of our buddies to come work on the show.
Sure.
Kevin Rankin, also from Justified and from Friday Night Lights, he came and played my best buddy in the movie, and he's pretty much my best buddy in real life too. So that was easy to get him out there. Deborah Jo Rupp, who was a big fan of Abby's and a friend of hers, came and played my mom.
Yeah,
so,
good actress.
Fantastic, and so it was cool. We put together a movie that was. Relatively low budget,
and
we shot it in one of my hiatuses over the summer, and now we are happy to be releasing the film July 30th, VOD, iTunes, PlayStation, Xbox,
VOD.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
VOD. That is our specialty.
You guys got me.
Are you doing any theaters?
No, we're not doing any theaters. Really, pretty much our festival circuit was our theater run.
Okay,
and we played in about. Like 17 or 18 festivals, something like that.
Wow.
We got really well received, and so it was pretty much we went there.
How'd you get distribution?
We got distribution through Film Buff and Cinetic.
Okay.
And Eric and Juan, you guys had previously worked with them before on a previous movie, and so Eric just sent a copy. And
wow.
Yeah, just said, hey, check this out, would you? And they called us back and said, we want to release this thing.
That's
and it's
great.
Interesting, as you guys probably know from VOD, like if something strikes their fancy and. They don't have to take this massive financial risk.
No.
Yeah.
In opening it in three cities
Absolutely.
Before they do
no,
something.
No, it's low
they
risk, just, high reward to do VOD.
Exactly. And so you just pump them out there as much as possible. If something hits,
yeah.
if something you know, the cream.
Well,
can
look
kind
at that
of
Burns movie he did last year. He did for like $9,000 VOD.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest hits of the year.
I know. It helps when you're Ed Burns and you can go on like Good Morning America. And
sure.
I mean, it's awesome. It's
did
fantastic.
He do Good Morning America? Is
something
Ed still
like,
getting that kind of stuff?
Or like Today or something like that?
You
one
know,
of those.
He
one
is actually
shows.
Doing that Darabont show next year, but I found out he's not even the lead on it. I'm like,
oh, really?
What happened to Ed, man? Like, he used
good,
to
man.
Be. He's great.
That's good.
He's great. I saw him in that Alex Cross movie, and I wanted to toss my TV out the window.
I didn't see that.
It's
how
so
was
fucking
it?
Terrible.
Is it bad?
You know what? It's not Tyler Perry's fault, and it's definitely not Ed Burns' fault. Rob Cohen's an awful director.
Really?
He's just no good. Stealth was another film of Rob Cohen's, I believe, in XXX. And like,
okay.
Just not my favorite.
Sure.
And,
sure.
Alex Cross is just not a good movie. But it's not the fault of any of the actors.
Right.
It's a well-casted film. The script's not great.
Sure.
But James Patterson had a hand in the script. I don't know why it wasn't so great, but Rob Cohen's just...
Well,
no,
you...
No.
I gotta say, you... I like when I hear a story where someone's motivated into making a movie by seeing some things that they don't like, because usually you see a good result of that. You see something like, I could make something better than that. And usually when that person says that and does make a movie, it turns out okay.
Yeah. Are
well,
you ready
was,
to bring Bruce on?
It was neat, too, because we had, you know, we also have a friend in the movie that she was in. It was cost $30,000. Our friend Mike Mohan made this movie called One Too Many Mornings. And that was a great movie. It was so good. Black and white, really, really well done and stuff. And we thought, my gosh, not to say, oh, we can do better than Mike. It was an inspiration to see, like, really, really great movies done for that cheap as well.
Yeah, bring Bruce in. Why do you keep putting him on hold? He could be interrupting me this whole time.
That's true. And what time is it in New York?
Am I there?
Bruce, you're here.
There's
hey, Bruce.
Bruce.
Hey, Bruce. How are you, man?
I'm here.
Bruce Fretz, my favorite
how's
person.
Going, guys?
By the way, Bruce Fretz and I are both on the diet trail together.
We are.
Yeah, Bruce is looking great. Have you seen Bruce lately?
I have not seen it. Bruce, am I going to see you in a couple weeks at the TCAs?
No.
No, you're not. I'm not coming out for that.
Bruce has not come out to L.A. in 10 years.
You're looking great too, Matt. Come on.
Thank you. Of course. Of course.
He's looking
and
good.
Brian's looking great. Sorry, Lee.
Brian always looks great. Come on.
I'm eating more because...
Brian doesn't need to lose any weight. Brian needs to put on a pound or two. You look a little skinny, Brian.
He is skinny. Where's that shirt from? What are you wearing there?
I have
That's
no
like
idea.
American Apparel XXXS.
My wife buys it. Ben Sherman, it says.
Oh, look at all this pie.
Oh, goodness. Things.
You guys are hungry.
Things are happening.
So, Bruce, we were talking about congratulations. We're also going to be talking about NCIS. I know my mom's got to know all about Ziva right now and all that other stuff you got going on. She's going to bother me if I don't ask. But and why hasn't Mark Harmon done our show? Pat, have you tried to get Mark Harmon? Is he, like, too good for my show?
Mark Harmon doesn't do anyone's show. What are you talking about? It's Mark Harmon.
Yeah, he does my show. That's right. He'll do this one.
I'll talk you up. We'll see what we can do.
Bruce, have you seen Congratulations?
I love Congratulations. I wrote about it in my on-demand column in TV Guide magazine. I also did a little news story on Brian.
Well,
and
thumbs up
terrific.
From Bruce.
I mean, I love VOD. There's a lot of really good stuff coming out on VOD that people don't know about. And this is a perfect example of a movie that's, you know, it's a small film, but it's very well made, very well written and acted. And, you know, people dig Brian from NCIS. They might know, you know, Abby and Kevin from Justified, but they might not know if they see it on their, you know, VOD menu. Was this thing any good, or is it just, you know, some piece of crap that got dumped on the VOD? It's not. It's really good. You should see it.
No, there's a
thanks,
lot of good
man.
Stuff
thank
on
so
the VOD. As you and I were just talking about the other day, Bruce, The Hunt. Fantastic.
The Hunt is great, yeah. Yeah.
Great flick.
Can't wait to see that one.
Great movie. You I think you're going to like it a lot. Lee.
Yeah, Thomas Vinterberg.
Lars von Trier protege Thomas. Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Von Trier was a protege of Vinterberg.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's the other way around, pal.
Okay.
I'm like 99% sure on that one.
Okay.
Anyway, Vinterberg's better director. Matt Nicholson is amazing in that movie.
I agree with you, Vinterberg's better director.
Last week, and I was just blown away by that film. So.
Yeah,
there's a lot of good stuff, but you've got to wade through the crap, too, because there's also stuff like Killing Season, this Travolta De Niro movie that went straight to VOD.
It's playing in
awful,
one theater,
you know,
in L.A.
Bad. You got Travolta, you got De Niro, you know, they're chasing each other out in the wild, and it's just awful. And then you look at something like Congratulations, where, you know, it's a low-budget film, but, you know, it was made with love, it was made with care, and it comes across on the screen.
But that just proves you don't need a Travolta, you don't need a De Niro, you don't need a Mark Steven Johnson to make a good movie. You need a good script first.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Was the script, and I think thanks for saying that, Bruce. We really did take our time on it. You know what I mean? Like it was a long process.
How long was the shoot?
The shoot itself wasn't that long. That was about 5 weeks.
So really, the prep was the most work for you guys.
Yeah, because we were asking people to work for free and borrowing locations left and right, and so we really had this guy Dwayne Anderson helped us produce, and it stretches a dollar to its infinite length, and this guy was awesome, and he helped us out a ton. But writing beforehand, I mean, the film has a very voyeuristic feel. Almost a lot of people say, "Oh, you guys must have been improvising a lot while you shot," and we really didn't. We just improvised a lot while we were writing.
Right.
We got that feel down.
And as we've talked about on the show, great acting comes off as improv because it's supposed to come off natural.
Yeah, we try to get as much natural writing as possible before the day, because God knows we'd love to improv, but man, when you have a budget that small, you just can't. You can't afford it, because then you have to match it as you turn around. You have to match it when you get different angles.
It's like when you watch Woody Allen films and you think a lot of it's improv when none of it's improv.
Yeah,
and yeah, right.
He gets down to the minutiae.
Well,
his good
film. So, have you seen Blue Jasmine yet?
No, I haven't.
Bruce, have you seen Blue Jasmine?
I have not. I want to see it, but I have not seen it yet.
Are you hearing good things?
I hear nothing.
Yeah,
I
me
hear
too.
Yet,
isn't
is
that weird?
Not necessarily good or bad. But,
yeah, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I've heard nothing.
Huh.
They're keeping it on the down on the purpose.
You know, it's interesting that you got Cate Blanchett and Andrew Dice Clay in the same ensemble. You know?
I know, and it comes out in 2 weeks,
like,
though, and no one's heard a thing about it.
You never know with Woody. It could be major, it could just be,
Right, well, from what was the one last year, Rome?
Rome with Love?
So awful.
Yeah, that was lame. Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible. So,
yeah.
Brian, when you did this on a hiatus, now,
yeah,
obviously you're doing pre and post, though, while you're on the show, I'm guessing, a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you balance that with the schedule of NCIS, which, by the way, I mean, I know we talked about, you know, NCIS, yeah, it pays well, it's a nice job, it's a procedural, so it's not like you have to be Brando and on the waterfront.
Right.
But
right.
It's a lot of hours.
Sure, yeah.
Right? I mean, you're on set some days for like 16 hours, right?
Well, fortunately, you know, this show has gotten to be a finely tuned machine over a decade. You know,
yeah.
I mean, so everyone that's there, people want to stay there. It's a really great set.
Sure.
So a lot of the crew members are the same guys we've had since day one. So everyone just gets better at their job. So we usually turn in under 12 hours.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Which is fantastic. And then also, I mean, with me on the show, I only do about half and three quarters
sure.
of the episodes. So I do have a little bit of time off, and I kind of figured it's too hard to fit a movie into those little time off, because I won't know. I'll just show up to work, and they go, oh, yeah, by the way, you have the next 2 weeks off. So it's like, oh, I can't
really
audition for something that's going to be the next 2 weeks. Yeah, because, you know, the character gets flipped, or the scripts sometimes get flipped and that sort of thing.
Right.
Not a lot of planning time. So the one thing that I could do is fill that time with writing.
Now, as a recurring guy, you were on for, what, 7, 8 seasons as
yeah,
a recurring 8 seasons, guy?
Yeah.
8 seasons. At what point in time did you find out you were going to be a regular, and did they tell you why they were promoting you? Did they tell you what the plan was long term?
Yeah, it was actually this last year was my first year as a regular.
You had a big storyline this year.
Yeah, and then prior to that, I'd had good storylines and whatnot, but it was interesting because the gig for me started on day one as a one-day guest star. I was supposed to go on and just go on for 1 day and then be done. And then they asked me back the next week. And then the guy who I replaced was actually shot because, I don't know, I'm not exactly sure why, but they wanted to get him off of there. So I kind of thought, well, this is a pretty expendable character. So I'm just going to show up, do my work, keep my head low.
And when I die, I die.
And when I die, that is fine. But, you know, in the meantime, I'm getting some residuals and I have a guest star thing. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then after several years, the character started to slowly become an integral part of the family. And that's kind of the difference between NCIS and other procedurals is that, like, a lot of people associate those characters as like a whole family together, you know, with this patriarch character of Mark Harmon and the crazy aunt of Polly Perrette and all that sort of thing. The wacky uncle playing with dead bodies in the basement and David McCallum. And
David McCallum have great chemistry together. Do you think that helped you get that series regular?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, David's always been in my corner and Mark has as well. And sometimes, you know, the network makes their decisions by by who knows what barometer, you know. But eventually they thought, oh, well, he's become enough of a part of this show that were he to go book a pilot. And I was testing for a pilot at the time and stuff. And they said, well, let us know how that turns out, because if he doesn't get that pilot, we want to sign him on. And so...
Yeah, you almost want to bomb that pilot when you find out you're going to sign on NCIS.
I went into that test being like, I got
you
nothing
to lose,
buddy.
You want to sign on for the number one that you've already been at for years, or do you want to get that pilot that may not work so well?
Just walk in dressed like a chicken.
Exactly.
You know, I have a theory, and then I'll throw it back to Bruce. I have a theory. I wanted to get your opinion on this. Guys like Mark Harmon and Joe Mantegna and these guys on TV right now who are older and don't do a ton of press, they're like veterans. Would you feel, though, do you feel like they may be two of the most, like, especially with their shows, underrated stars? I mean, they went back to being underrated, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You never hear about Mark Harmon in the Emmys or Joe Mantegna in Emmys. And by the way, Joe Mantegna saved Criminal Minds.
Oh, yes,
because
absolutely.
That
when
show,
Mandy left.
And by the way, when Mandy left, he saved it. And not only did he save it, the show's still in the top 10 every week. Yeah. And it's one of the most popular shows on TV. So are these guys, like, really underrated box office draws in your mind?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no question about it. You look at the worldwide sales of NCIS, of Criminal Minds.
Yeah.
I mean, someone at CBS told me that we're in 202 territories worldwide. I mean, that is humongous.
Yeah.
And not only that, but we're a highly rated show in that many territories. Now, I look at that and I got to think, who in those territories is differentiating between, that's a movie person and that's a TV person.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? No, it's just that person I know because they're in my house every week and I watch them for an hour. But as far as, like, the whole awards thing go, I don't know. They're allergic to procedurals, man. You know, I mean, it also, there's a lot of really great hour-long drama stuff on cable that takes a lot more risk, I think, when it comes to its content, and it's maybe a bit grittier, like Breaking Bad, like Justified, all that sort of stuff. And they're fantastic.
And, you know, and maybe Harmon and Mantegna's roles aren't, like, deep enough where they would get nominated for an Emmy, per se. But I just feel like they don't get the credit they deserve
either.
No,
they really don't. And Mantegna, I mean, like, he was there. He saved the show after Mandy in a lot of ways. And then also, you know, they had the Criminal Minds spin-off of it.
And that didn't work at all.
And then, you know, their show stayed strong.
They were going to cancel Criminal Minds until Joe stepped in.
Yeah.
And that was the plan.
And the big similarity, though, is, I mean, I've met Joe a number of times. He's just one of the nicest guys.
Really nice.
Great
Super
guy.
Harmon, nice, a really nice guy, too.
Yeah, and Harmon's a, you know, give you the shirt off his back kind of guy.
Really?
I mean, literally, he comes and gives me shirts that he finds up in his attic. And, like, he's like, hey, you want this? I know you're from Colorado. Here's the Colorado
shirt. I don't
fit
in this anymore.
Exactly. But, really, really nice guys. And it goes to show, like, man, nice guys do make it, you know, make it really well.
Yeah.
And they may not get the accolades that
maybe they don't care either.
Yeah,
I get a sense they don't care so much.
No, they don't need to have everybody at their feet and ask and put them on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Be interviewed about where they like to go for sandwiches
I think there's a certain security that you get, when you're in, like, a top 10 show and you're like, okay, if I don't get an award, I still, you know, people love the show.
Mark and Joe's the same way. They're both kind of like, they're not Hollywood guys.
Oh, yeah.
They're kind of guys who are just, you know, they you would think they're blue-collar Joes if you met them, like, and you didn't know who they were.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just don't get the sense that they care that much about the whole Hollywood machine.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I can say that for
they
sure.
They certainly
want to
work, but they don't.
Sure.
Yeah.
What do you think, Bruce?
Yeah, I think they're both great actors. I mean, I think that the roles are kind of subtle. You know, it doesn't call for a lot of emotion, so it's not going to get you, you know, the automatic Emmy nominations. But, you know, people love them. They sense how real they are, you know, and they're comfortable bringing them into their homes every week. And they both had amazing runs as actors, you know. I mean, going all the way back to St. Elsewhere for Mark and through the West Wing and, you know, movies and Mantegna with the theater in Chicago and all the Mammoth stuff. I mean, they've got a real body of work, so they can just kind of, you know, rest on that and know that people love them. And, you know, they get paid good money, and so if they don't get any nominations, so what? You know, I mean, I don't think they really care. It's not what they're.
And Bruce brought up a great point, too.
I got to ask the TV Guide reporter question to Brian
about
Cote. What's going on? What do you know? How long is he going to be around, and what's happening with that?
I probably know as much as you do right now because we just got our. We just got our first script, and we have a
that was Bruce laughing
tomorrow.
At you for your bullshit. Just so you know.
No, we just got our first script tomorrow. So this whole
and she's doing a couple more, right? So you probably wouldn't know in the first script. You probably get a setup of it. Or...
Yeah, it's like it's basically like I think she's doing two. I'm not sure.
You're not gonna kill her off just in case she wants to come back some. You know,
here's the crazy part. I'm not doing anything. On Twitter, though, I'm getting killed. Everyone's like,
oh, you're
what?
Killing her off on Twitter?
Yeah, no, on Twitter, people are like, why is she leaving? Why are you making her leave? I'm like,
I'm
not doing anything.
Yeah, Brian.
No, you can't kill anyone off anymore.
No, exactly. But as far as what her trajectory is going to be here, I'm really not sure what is going to happen. We just got our scripts last night, so it's kind of like our whole production team is like really behind the eight ball now because we need to start shooting in 2 days.
Is there anything you could say, even vague if you need to, about the first script for the first season? What is the season premiere? Is there anything we should be looking forward to?
The title is What the Fuck.
Okay.
Was that really the title for when you guys got it?
Yeah, no, it's called Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. that's the title of the first script. And it's written by Gary Glassberg, and he's our showrunner, executive producer. So what he's really doing is he's starting right from where we left off at the end of the last season, where I started reading the script, and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's like a million untied ends.
Right.
Irrespective of Cody's situation and all that.
How long did you know about Cody's situation before it hit the press? Did Gary have enough time to plan this out?
About a half hour.
Really? So you had no idea?
No, no, no.
Did Gary have an idea, like weeks or at least, or has he been prepping all year for Ziva and now?
No,
really?
I don't think that any of us knew necessarily. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure.
If your title is What the Fuck, I'd be worried people are going to confuse it with the Merchant Ivory production. The same name. Let me ask you this, Bruce. Why do you think...
From like a more personal angle, though, Brian, I mean, how do you feel about Cote leaving? I mean, she has been part of the family for... you know, a long time, and it's going to be shocking to the fans to see her go.
She's like the real hot broad. She's the real hot broad on the show. How are you going to replace that?
I mean, I'm going to show some more legs. I'm going to show a bit more of the abdominal region. No, I mean, as far as personally, Bruce, I think, you know, I as her friend, I got to just kind of say, I kind of have to say, you know, I'm just hoping for the best for her and that she, you know, is happy with whatever she's moving on to next.
Yeah.
But, I mean... as kind of an actor on the show, I'm like, man, she's really good at what she does. That character is great. I'm sad that we're losing that character. But one of the cool things about this show is that this show has gotten better every time that someone has left, to be honest. Like when Sasha left, I feel like we got better with the addition of Cody, and I think that when Lauren left, we got
Rocky Carroll.
I mean,
Rocky's great.
So, like, even though right now my mind is like,
but
how
Lauren
the hell
wasn't
we...
bad either, by
she
the
was
way.
Great.
Lauren Holly.
Oh my gosh,
Lauren
no,
Holly's actually
Lauren
surprising
Holly
in certain things.
Yeah.
Like, I know she's done some bad movies here and there, but
who hasn't? Come on.
But like, if she gets the right script, like she was good in NCIS. She was good.
Well, it's interesting because like while I was working with all those people, I thought Sasha was great, and I thought Lauren was great too.
Yeah.
And when they left, I'm thinking, well, we can't replace that, or you know, we're gonna get hurt after that, and our show got better each time. So I'm hoping that now, even though now my mind's like, oh man, I'm really bummed that she's leaving, that I'm looking at it with my head instead of my heart, and I'm thinking, no, we're actually gonna get better.
So
it's gonna provide a challenge.
You replace Ziva with Abby Miller. That's what you do. That's the plan.
Call the presses.
I think she'd be great.
Oh yeah,
I think she could kick some ass. Yeah, I'd be all about that.
There you go.
Man, she was so good on Justified.
Yeah.
Again.
She is.
She's great every year. Justified, you need to get on that show, too.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what you need.
I
you need to get
crossover.
On Justified, because that's the
how's
best
your,
show on
how's
TV.
How's your Kentucky draw?
Yeah, right.
It's all right.
All right. Okay.
So, Bruce, do you got any insight on NCIS at all? Do you know anything going on over there?
Who, me?
Yeah, you. No, the other.
No,
Bruce.
I don't know anything. They're putting up a wall. You know, they're just releasing statements and you know, not specifying how many episodes she's going to do. They're not telling.
Come
the
on,
thing.
You guys
but, you
are
know,
cable.
As we get closer to the actual episode airing, we'll get into it. I'm sure we'll be doing a big story. You know, NCIS is our bread and butter at TV Guide.
Yeah.
Like it, every time we put on the cover, it sells. So I'm sure we'll be doing a big story on Cote when she leaves and about the show. And you know, it's and I agree with Brian. I mean, it's such a well-oiled machine and it has endured you know cast changes of the past. I'm sure it won't miss a beat. I'm sure they'll do a great finale for her. You know, they'll figure out a great way to write off her character. You know, it'll be a big opportunity for Weatherly to, you know, really emote And, you know, and then they'll find somebody great. I mean, who doesn't want to be on NCIS? They have their pick of, you know, any number of great actresses, I'm sure, who would love to join the ensemble. And they'll come up with a new character that'll, you know, fit into the ensemble. I think it's going
to
be fine.
Do you know why she waited so long to decide she wasn't going to come back? Is this a contract thing? Is this she just wanted to leave to do movies or TV or other things?
I don't know. That's one of the parts that's kind of
because I'm sure some people are going to wonder if it's a money thing, because if she wanted to leave to do other TV, you would have left during pilot season. You would have left while you could have gotten signed on to do something.
Yeah,
it's a little late in the game.
Well, I mean, I suspect it's not a money thing because, you know, you're on the number one show in the world. I mean, that's probably where more money's going to be at. So I don't think it's that.
But after the Criminal Minds, because the women on Criminal Minds had that big controversy over they weren't getting paid nearly as much as Joe and Thomas Gibson and them. The first thing I think people would be scuttlebutting about is a money issue.
Yeah.
But you don't think it was that?
I sincerely doubt it. I do. So it's one of those things, though. Like, I think at this point, the way I'd say it is, like, pretty personal decision for her.
Sure.
And it's one of those things where I'm like, all right, I just got to respect that and be like,
but
cool.
You have talked to her and everything's good.
Yeah,
she's happy about it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, she is where she is, and I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure really where, you know, where she's going to from here, but it's one of those things where, you know, we all grown really close over the years and everything, and we really kind of just at this point got to say I really wish you well, and we hope that this thing that that's been put in front of us makes our show that much better, because, you know, sometimes you put conflict into a season to give it, you know, more oomph. You know, like last year they killed off Rocky Carroll's wife,
right?
And that gave his character something massive for
the
whole year.
Deal.
You know, it's a big thing. So I mean, this thing is like a big obstacle that's being thrown in our lap. And I mean, I got a lot of confidence in our writing staff to take advantage of it and say, how is this going to, like, mess with our team for an entire year? It's really great.
And then you have this thing now where it's going to be a lot of men on the show.
Yeah.
Are you going to replace her, you think, right away? Or are you going to wait a season? Or
Again, I'm not doing
you have
anything.
No, Brian, I hear differently on Twitter.
So everybody's doing this like HBO. Like, where everyone's lips are sealed.
No, I think the reason why Bruce, probably why you haven't heard anything either is because
we don't know yet.
Because everyone's like me, where it's just like, I don't know, I just heard about this on Thursday. You know what I mean? Like, we really don't know. Kind of got to circle the wagons.
You don't even know how many weeks she's going to be around for?
Nope.
No. When do you go back to shooting?
I go back for the table read tomorrow.
So it's coming up. It's
tomorrow.
Now
we start shooting on Wednesday. So it's really, down to the wire, like the last second possible.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So something was weird, but, you know, who knows what it is.
Okay, let's get back to congratulations here. So
please.
Now you and Abby do this film. It's getting on video on demand July 30th. Okay, is there any plans for you and Abby to continue writing together and do another small project?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I was talking with Eric, one of our directors, and he said it'd be silly to not all work together again, not just Abby and I, but, like, you know, with Juan and Eric and some of the other people that we've worked with, because it's worked so well so far. You know, we've had a good time. We wrote a script we're really proud of and produced something well. So, yeah, I mean, I think in the future we're definitely going to be working again together. I'm working with Juan right now on a script about fatherhood.
Oh, okay.
And it kind of takes a similar approach that Congratulations took, which is kind of questioning what is the definition of a father as opposed to what's the definition of a marriage. And takes more of a criminal look at a guy who's kind of steeped in crime trying to maintain his fatherhood. And it's been really fun to play around with Juan. So it's cool. We'll continue working, I'm sure.
What are the advantages of doing a video on demand feature like this, where when you get distribution for it, I'm assuming even if your budget's low, whatever, maybe you're not getting all your money back based off the distribution deal right away. You got to wait and see what comes in from the video on demand. So you do a small picture that you and Abby are really proud of. And I hate to call it a small picture, but I mean that's what in the big
budget wise, sure,
in the big, you know, thing of
it's
everything.
Term that we're using.
So what I mean,
but my
question has to do with that, where it's like, obviously you want to do more, you just want to get great roles. How do you make sure this gets out there to the people in Hollywood that will get you those great roles?
I rent a helicopter with a lot of DVDs.
Drop them all.
just blanket the streets.
A dead drop.
Joker style.
It was funny at the at all of our festivals that we went to, we just went with stacks and stacks of DVDs. You know, it took like hundreds of DVDs to each of our festivals. And we just gave them out to free to everybody who was there. And we just said, the price for these is just that you have to Facebook about it. You have to tell your friends about it. Just talk about it. That's all we care about. We want this thing getting out there. You know, it's such a small budget thing that if we don't recoup all our expenses, it's not like anyone's losing their shirt.
Yeah.
So really...
Well, you'll have chances to recoup because on Video On Demand, iTunes, Amazon, I'm just looking at it right now, PlayStation 3, Xbox, Cinema Now, YouTube, and Vudu.
Yeah, it's pretty...
So basically, if you own any kind of video on demand device...
No, it's not on Wii.
It's not on Wii.
We're trying to crack that Wii nut. It's a really hard nut to
crack. You should make a Wii U movie so I can play along.
The first, right.
Yeah, so what we're hoping to do is, you know, we have a decent to very good release on all of these VOD sources. And then based off of that, our partners at Film Buff will negotiate a contract of some sort with a network, you know, like Showtime or
Stars, Cinemax, like whatever.
And then after that, that's when you go to Netflix next, and you know you let the people who have been holding out have the freebie thing.
That's great.
But I don't think that people should do the freebie thing. I think they should support independent theater or
movies.
Pay $4 and you got it on iTunes or
$4
I don't know what it's going to be.
I agree. It feels like a dying breed independent film.
Yeah, but by the same token, I think that there's a huge influx now with the advent of like, you know, the Red camera and all of these you know, less expensive ways of making movies.
You can make a beautiful film
you
for nothing now, right?
With YouTube, you know, there are the 12-minute filmmakers that are brilliant, you know? So.
Well, the best film I think I've seen all year is Before Midnight. And
It
was just disturbing to me because Lee and I were talking about it. This fucking Sharknado. I'm embarrassed to even bring it up. Because I know everybody thinks they're so fucking cool to talk about on Twitter. Like, they think they're the bee's knees because they like a really awful, kitschy film.
But they like it in an ironic way. Nobody watched it, but everybody tweeted about it.
And the thing that bothers me is...
I'm serious.
Thing had, like, 5 million tweets, but only 1.5 million viewers, okay? They had 5 million tweets, and I don't think Before Midnight in 3 months it's been released has... 1 million tweets.
No, and that stayed in theaters a long time.
Yes.
It's actually doing fairly well considering the budget.
It just pisses me off.
Yeah.
Go see the Before Midnight. Go see the Congratulations.
Yeah.
Because, by the way, those are the films you're talking about in 3 months. I'm still talking about Before Midnight. I'll still be talking about Congratulations.
Absolutely.
Because these are conversation pieces you can have with your intelligent friends.
Yeah, and then after you're done, you say... What happened to them after the credits?
Right.
You know, where are they right now?
Right.
What are they doing right now?
And the fact that you're talking about marriage, now we can go have that discussion with our friends, the same exact discussion, maybe just with different answers, different opinions, similar opinions. And, I mean, I know people think that sounds like a book club and it's stupid and whatever, but no, this is what intelligent people do with their lives.
It's conversation is what it is.
They
you know
get
what
together
I mean?
And have conversation.
Exactly,
thank you.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Whereas or you can just, you know.
Or you can sit around and play NCAA football 14.
Well,
and
you can watch Tara Reid get eaten by a shark. I mean, like, that's just.
No, and I hear she doesn't get eaten by the shark because she wants to come back for a sequel. So.
Yeah. Why would she not?
Yeah, because she has nothing else to do.
Well,
yeah.
This is probably the biggest Sci-Fi Channel crossing of things in a movie since Mansquito, if you remember.
Bruce, please promise.
That was a thing.
Bruce, tell me
that
the truth.
Really a thing?
You did not watch Sharknado, did you?
Was it better than Mansquito?
I did not watch Sharknado. I did not. And I'm glad I didn't, because, you know, why waste your time on crap like that? You know, I mean,
Thank you.
A lot of interesting stuff out there on VOD. I mean, it's becoming more competitive.
Yeah, like
but I mean,
Grown
like
Ups
film
too,
like the Nancy and Neil Jordan's film that I wrote my first column for RogerEbert.com about is a terrific movie, and it's available on VOD, you know, and even the Ryan Gosling, you know, Only God Forgives, retaining him with the drive director. You know, it's got some problems as a film, but Kristen Scott Thomas is amazing and should get an Oscar nomination for it, you know.
That's great.
So there's really good stuff. You just got to know where to look, and, you know, something like Congratulations, you know, you're going to get a lot more enjoyment out of that in 90 minutes than, you know, the kind of ironic, kitschy fun you might get out of making fun of Sharknado and tweeting about it, you know. And so I'm all in favor of, you know, the independent films, the small films, the films that make you think. And, you know, I barely want to go out to the theaters this summer. There's nothing really that I want to see. You know, I went to see World War Z yesterday. There's no characters. There's no character development whatsoever.
No, there's
none.
I feel the same way, Bruce. I feel like there's been nothing
to
see.
I'm tired of that.
Muriel and Enos, you made a great point. Bruce Fretz, by the way, from TV Guide with us. Brian Dietzen from NCIS and the film Congratulations, July 30th, video on demand. And Bruce, congratulations yourself, I wanted to tell you, on the RogerEbert.com gig. That's great.
Thank you.
They're hiring all my friends over there. They got you. They got Susan. They took Susan from USA Today.
Oh, cool.
Like,
well, they had...
Yeah.
All my pals are getting hired over there. I'm liking it.
That's great.
They're looking for new critics because obviously Roger's voice is no longer going to be there. So they're...
They needed to replace Roger's
voice. New York is the editor-in-chief of the site now. He's a smart guy and... He's bringing in a bunch of smart people to write serious stuff about film, and I'm psyched about it.
I'm psyched for that, too. I was worried that the site was going to be taken over by this guy, Richard Roper.
No.
Okay.
Bruce.
Roper's got his own gig.
Bruce, are you...
He doesn't need it.
Yeah, he's not besties with Richard. You know, Richard always comments on my Facebook. He's always trying to start fights.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know what Roper does that I think is really chicken shit? He will say something on my Facebook, and then he'll delete it like 2 minutes later.
But he knows he's done.
But he knows I get the email. He knows I get the email. So I'll take a picture of it and repost it just to be like, you can't delete it, asshole. But like, he...
No, but you were going to say, Murray Enos, you know, in World War Z, has basically nothing to do except sit around and like talk on the phone occasionally to Brad Pitt's character. And then you look at her on The Killing last night, and she was incredible, you know? And it just goes to show that, like, the interesting stuff is not happening in the blockbusters. It's happening on TV, and it's happening in these small films.
Well, it's interesting also that when you have a film that you make for $100,000 versus being beholden to shareholders for $100 million, you can really take risks with the storytelling, and you can also tell something that's much more honest at a much more honest pace. Whereas, with a $100 million film, you have to move a lot faster to get those stars' faces in there, to get them their lines, to get everything moving as fast as possible. You can't take that moment to breathe, you know, unless you have Steven Spielberg and Daniel Day-Lewis that are working together, then you can take tons of moments because, you know, that's what people are paying for. But box office-wise, you want to recoup $100 million. You need to have action, action, action. You need to have star, star, star. You need to have... this sex, that drug, these whatever. You can't take your time.
And if you
want
to listen to Spielberg, he'll tell you those days of him and Daniel Day-Lewis fucking around giving each other time for their shit, those days are coming to an end, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
According to him, Lincoln was this close to being an HBO movie. Now, I don't know many $150 million HBO movies, but God bless Steven for bullshitting us all. Not that he doesn't own his own studio. I love the guy. I love the guy, but that quote he made is ridiculous.
He made the Liberace movie for HBO, you know? That's a terrific film.
No, it's a great film.
He couldn't get it in Asian theaters, you know, not in the States at least. It's getting released theatrically in Europe, but I mean, you know, that's like Oscar-caliber filmmaking right there, and they can't get it into theaters because it's, you know, it's not a blockbuster.
Yeah.
I do think the quality of HBO's original movies has gotten better in the last few years.
No, it's really good.
Stuff. Yeah.
I mean, they're not all great, but the quality's gotten better. Yes. You're right about that. The right word's quality,
Well, I've been enjoying the summer documentaries on
the Vice?
HBO.
The Vice show?
Well, Vice has been awesome, but each week they've also had a new documentary over the course of the summer.
I haven't caught up on those yet.
Gaslight 2 just came out.
Right.
And, I mean, there have been some amazing...
I haven't caught up on it yet. There's some good stuff on there.
Gaslight, the first one, is something I think should have been in theaters.
But no one. That's the problem, though. It made no money. Adam Green, who was on the show last week, made a really good point, and this is why I asked you if your film was going to be in theaters at all, because he says it really helps with the distribution of the film, like post-theater.
Yeah, that's what we've seen from a couple of our friends' movies.
Even if you're in, like, five theaters.
Yeah, one of our friends, Todd Berger, his film, It's a Disaster, has David Cross, and,
we love that film, I need to check it out.
Really,
Julia
really
Stiles.
Julia Stiles, Aaron Hayes. They released in how many cities was it? Like five cities or something like that? Five or six? And they basically did that in preparation for their VOD, to publicize their VOD.
Yeah, right.
So the theatrical release will, like, 9 times out of 10 on these type of movies will lose money.
Right.
But they're hoping that just the publicity
they're hoping
of it being
then
in the
like
theater,
Target and Walmart and them are going to buy a lot
and then
of
it'll,
right.
it'll be released
units.
VOD the next day, the next day after it closes.
Bruce, did you see It's a Disaster?
I did. It was very funny,
liked it, too?
There's like too much because I'm writing a monthly on-demand column for TV Guide now, and I can only pick like five films. to fit, and there's too much. There's like too much good or at least notable stuff. So
yeah,
I ended up having to mix in like the good small films like Congratulations with the, you know, big crappy films like Killing Season and you know, Only God Forgives. But like there's a great film on VOD this month with Sienna Miller where she plays a belly dancer in Chicago, and like you would never even think, you know, that this was gonna be something good. And it got a, you know, minor theatrical release. But she's terrific in it. There's also a great film with Steve Coogan, where he worked with Michael Winterbottom, the director he's worked with so much, where he plays this famous porn magnate in England in the 70s. It's like, you know, Boogie Nights with a British accent. It's called The Look of Love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got Byzantium. Like, there's like great stuff. Every month it's more and more great stuff that's ending up on VOD. And you just got to know, you know, and nobody's really writing about it because some critics think, oh, this isn't in theaters, so I'm not going to review it. And TV critics don't really consider it TV. So I feel like, you know, there needs to be more coverage of this, especially online, so that people can know, like, well, even though it's only $4, do I want to spend it if it's going to be, you know, a terrible movie?
Isn't it interesting, though, Bruce, like, you look at it and you think, you like, I'll go out with my wife and risk, you know, whatever it is going to be, like, $30 for two movie tickets to go see World War Z. And not really, the reviews have been mixed. Some people have said it's really fun. Others have said it's just trash. And yet, when you get down to like, I like that actor, I like that actor, I've never heard of this director, it's only $4. Somehow, like, the should I or shouldn't I gets, like, way bigger, you know? Like, should I invest my $4 in this VOD movie?
Well,
like,
when I was doing my blog,
it's only an hour and a half
films.
Of your life. That's how I saw
Arbitrage. The films that would get the most traffic were stuff like The Samaritan with Samuel L. Jackson, this movie that, you know, went to VOD. That's terrific.
Yeah.
You know, and people found out about it, you know, through, you know, places like my blog. But you wouldn't know because he also made another movie called Beating Evil, where he played the devil, but it was terrible. It came out like a month of each other on VOD.
Well,
and no one's like reviewing these films to say, okay, watch this Sam Jackson film, not that Sam Jackson film. You know?
That's
an
important point.
So it's like a whole new world to cover as a journalist, and obviously a whole new world, you know, for the film industry too, for distribution. That's exciting.
Bruce is making a really good point, though, that no one's covering it. And this is interesting to me because 10, 15 years ago, the Entertainment Weeklies and the Rolling Stones, especially Entertainment Weekly, they used to have real journalists. And the New York Times.
Yeah, I worked there 10 years ago. Did I mention that?
Yes, you did work there 10 years ago when they had real journalists.
Right.
And so the point I'm making, though, is, and by the way, I love Jeff Boucher. He's a real guy. So, okay, there are some people. But the point I'm making is, where are these articles that are saying, because this, I think you can make this argument, and I don't know if it's false, that the quality of stuff coming out on video on demand trumps most of the stuff coming out in theaters. Where's that article? Where's the article talking about the new wave?
You know, I mean, look at the, you know, Congratulations versus Grown Ups 2. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And by the way, Bruce made a funny there, but at the same time, there's a similarity in what kind of story you're trying to tell.
Sure.
You're trying to talk about family and marriage, and there's Grown Ups 2. And there's Congratulations. And so maybe with Grown Ups 2, you get to see the big stars and they make funny, but you're going to forget that movie in a day. With Congratulations, you're still going to be talking about it in a few weeks. And that's what's important,
exactly.
I think.
And there was the same thing with It's a Disaster. If you hated This is the End, It's a Disaster is a very similar movie. It's just, it's a real movie with characters, and it's not crass and self-congratulatory in that way. These things come in twos. And I think the people who put out the big tentpole movies aren't really too worried that people aren't reviewing these smaller movies.
I mean, you don't need that competition.
No, absolutely.
People staying at home. I mean, if people, you know, wise up and say, I can stay at home and, you know, all five of us can watch a movie for $4. I mean, that's, you know, less than a dollar a piece. Or we can go to the movie theater and, you
know,
spend
and we forced them, not me, but this business was forced to morph because of indie filmmaking to begin with. They didn't like the Sundance wave. They didn't like Cannes. They didn't like that these indie movies were making big waves. But the press forced them to make big waves, and, you know, they put them out there and they said, no one's going to talk about this movie, no one wants to distribute this movie, but this movie's phenomenal.
It was too big to ignore.
Too big to ignore.
Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
And that's
it
what
was
we need
to
do with video on demand. It needs to get to the point where it's too big to ignore.
And really, the way that the way that, I mean, you see that happening now are people making efforts is through social media, through Twitter, through Facebook,
yeah.
trying to spread this virally because God knows we're not going
to
get a commercial.
It
you know
needs
what I mean? We're not going to get it that way. So really, what it comes down to is people like Bruce, you know, writing things in a major U.S. publication like mm-hmm. TV Guide, and we're so thankful that he did.
It's really important.
And then also spreading the word on Twitter and spreading the word on Facebook. That's why I said, you know, price for this DVD is not, I don't want $5 from you. I want you to talk to your friends. I want you to talk to your schoolmates that you're going to film school with and tell them that everybody has to check out this movie when
yeah.
it comes out.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think another thing is, with the way the business has been going, Brian, how do you feel like movies are going to stand the test of time when you're basically just streaming movies now? There's no reason to buy
yeah.
Blu-ray or DVDs unless, I mean, you're absolutely in love. I talked to somebody, was it Adam Green that was telling us that they don't put extras on Blu-rays and DVDs really anymore unless you pay
right.
for them yourself or you do them yourself. And then maybe if it's convenient to the distributor, they'll put them on the disc. But they don't bother even doing it because they're like, it costs money and no one's buying Blu-rays and DVDs anyways.
Yeah.
So how does your movie now stand the test of time when no one's going to put it on a bookshelf like they do The Godfather and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you're going to have those same collectors who say, I want the collector's edition. I want the
yeah.
Blu-ray edition of The Godfather. I want the 4K version of The Godfather when that becomes popular or whatever. And they'll have to have those things sitting on their shelves because they're their favorite movie of all time. But I'm starting to get libraries just in my computer.
Yeah.
You know? I'm starting to get, you know, in my iTunes, my movie folders filling up, and I see these little
yeah.
thumbnails. And that's where my collection is starting to grow.
Yeah.
And what's kind of cool is that, you know, it has all the, you get it from the right places. It has all the cast lists. It has all of the synopsis. It has some of the extras. You know, we included some extras on when we had our deliverables to Film Buff. So it'll be interesting to see what they include along with it. But I just think the physical form of it, you know, I haven't bought like a CD
yeah.
in I don't know how long.
Right.
But I've certainly bought albums. You know, I've
sure.
bought them off iTunes.
Well,
on iTunes,
yeah. Yeah, that's the thing, though, is I buy books because I like the feel of a book.
Sure.
I like,
sure.
I like
yeah.
a rack of DVDs. I like the
I
literal
do.
Thing.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
that's why film fans are now more important than ever in my mind. And it's sad that they're not as vocal as they used to be.
No.
And part of the problem goes to a lot of these internet sites where film fans would go turned out to be fraudulent, like the Ain't It Cool Newses of the world. And
yeah.
and I think a lot of film fans now go to Reddit and stuff like that. But film fans are now more important than ever because it's a true film fan who's going to buy Congratulations and put it on their shelf. And then 10 years from now, say to their friends, oh, have you seen this movie? And they can just pull it off their shelf,
yeah.
hand it to you. Because I'm not going to walk around my computer and go, oh, let's look at my iTunes account.
Yeah.
I got this great movie you got to check
it's
out.
True.
And maybe you will. I don't know, but I don't.
It's true. When we went, when we started doing our festival stuff, we went and bought 1,000 DVDs from,
yeah.
from a DVD provider. And we, you know, designed the jacket and this DVD and all that sort of stuff. 1,000 for $1,000, you know, a buck
yeah.
a piece.
Sure.
And then that's basically just promotional publicity. But when it came to actually producing real DVDs for distribution and for sales in Walmart, you know, we were told by our distributor, you know, basically, if you can see a movie being consumed in mass quantities at Walmart, then you know that's an avenue we're going to explore. But if it's an independent romance, like your movie is, and really a think piece, then we're probably going to lose out because you know, people in the bargain bin, they want to see stuff like Sharknado and like Grown Ups, you know what I mean, like
yeah.
they want the funny and they
He's
want
right.
the crass
He's
and they
right.
want, you know, that sort of thing, and this is not that sort of thing. So unfortunately,
American movie audiences love mediocrity.
Some of
well we were talking about how I don't think the audience is as dumb as some putter outers of content think they are. Though they are close.
Grown Ups 2 did beat Pacific Rim this weekend,
yeah.
and that's something you got to consider then.
It's funny that one suggestion that it might have beaten it just because giant monsters aren't some people's cup of tea.
And by the way, Pacific Rim also cost more money to go see than Grown Ups 2, which means it should have made more money than Grown Ups 2 because of those 3D and IMAX
yeah.
ticket sales, and it still didn't. So it makes you wonder, like, and
I
by
love giant monsters,
right? And I like Pacific Rim, and I haven't seen Grown Ups 2 yet. I think I'm going to go tonight, but you know, it's I probably
good luck
would,
with that.
Yeah,
yeah. There you go, Bruce.
Bruce, did you end up seeing it?
I was going to sneak into it after I saw World War Z, but then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to sneak back out again.
yeah. So you snuck out of Grown Ups.
I snuck into the first one.
You're going to have to open the door twice.
And I left before it was over because it was just, you know.
Yeah, Bruce walked out of
Grown-Ups.
Yeah. He calls it Grown-Ups. It's kind of funny.
I do.
Yeah, it's his pun.
I love the pun.
Yeah.
I love the
pun. Very good. Very good. Well played, sir.
Well, Brian, I got to tell you, I'm so appreciative you've come down here and stuff. And,
oh, thank you for having
me. I think we've had some really interesting discussion.
Absolutely,
about independent film. And, Bruce, do you got anything else for Brian?
No, I actually got to hop off. I got to go pick up my guinea pigs. They're over at my friend's house. So,
you got guinea pigs?
Good talking to you guys, though.
You got guinea pigs?
I got guinea pigs, yeah. I was trying to sell my house. So I had to take the guinea pigs out of the house. My neighbor's been watching them, and now I took my house off the market. So I'm going to go bring the guinea pigs home. So that's my
Bruce, your life is starting to sound very Chuck Lorre sitcom-esque. Exactly. Not Norman Lear sitcom-esque. Chuck Lorre, though.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon, Bruce.
Well, thank you so much, Bruce. I appreciate all the good word that you're spreading, my man.
Absolutely. See you soon.
Bruce right. Fretz, TV Bye. Guide, thank you very much. And RogerEbert.com, you can catch his he has a great column he did about Neil Jordan and Neil Jordan's films,
right.
Which is they're hiring all my friends there. I'm very excited about RogerEbert.com. I thought after he died I'd never go to that website again, probably.
No, yeah.
Now they're like hiring everybody I like.
That's cool,
so,
man.
Yeah, I like it.
I like it.
Juan, do you have anything that you want to discuss about directing the film?
Or just in general, how you feel about...
Yeah, how you feel about anything. Has that meatball put you to sleep yet?
Yeah.
There's a secret sauce in that tomato sauce.
He just had the somnambulistic meatball.
By the way, we're here at 603 North Hollywood Way, Tay, Chicago. Last week I was pimping out Billy Freakin comes here for all the hot dogs.
Does he?
I was telling
for
you,
for the package,
yeah,
for the crew.
But Billy won't go. No, not for the crew, for him.
Oh, for him, okay.
They'll sit in the editing room and Billy will send somebody. He won't go nowhere.
No.
Billy can't be like
someone
bothered.
Might do something without him knowing.
Right, but people will go out and get him Chicago dogs.
Yeah.
And yeah.
See, I just think of chicken legs now whenever I hear Billy Freakin.
Did you like Killer Joe? And see, I saw Killer Joe in a theater. I was lucky enough to.
Yeah,
but
me too.
It was in like 5 theaters.
Yeah, I had to go to Lemley.
It was.
Right. So, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Without video on demand, how would we have seen a great film like Killer Joe?
Yeah.
You and I got lucky enough that we live in a big metro area.
Yeah, we live
in LA. Can go see a movie.
I always think if you live in Pocatello, Idaho,
you're fucked.
How are you going to find. And you know what? If you chose to live in Pocatello, Idaho, then
but some people
you probably
don't choose to live in Pocatello, and they can't.
Well, yeah,
because
they're in witness protection.
That's most great. But I mean, yeah, that is a problem though for me too. Is like my dad lives. My dad lives in where does he live now? Where the fuck does he live? Nashville.
Idaho.
My dad lives in Nashville now, and Nashville's a big city, right? Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah.
You know, I went there and I couldn't find an indie film to save my life.
Oh, really?
No.
And it's like, by the way, there are growing kids and teens in Nashville that want to be educated
want to not see stupid shit.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be brilliant art. It just, can I not see that? I
don't
want to see that stuff.
I don't know how hard it is for Landmark to put one theater in each major city.
Yeah.
And just show a few indie films.
Well, I mean, I think that's really where independent film festivals are coming in, and I think that's why independent film festivals are growing right now. There's more and more. One festival that I went to that I was really inspired by was Beloit.
Yeah?
Yeah, Beloit.
Really?
It's fantastic.
I love
man.
Beloit, Wisconsin.
Beloit
is
so good.
It's a hole in the wall.
Yeah.
I used to go there to play pool
and
smoke cigarettes because you could still smoke there.
Yeah.
And it cost, one time we went to Beloit. I mean, it's so funny they brought up Beloit. I literally would go there like every other weekend because I lived in Chicago.
Yeah.
I would literally go there like every other weekend just to hang out, and people would be like, what the fuck is there doing Beloit? Nothing.
Exactly.
And that's why it's great. I asked a woman at a Shell gas station how much it was for an apartment in Beloit, and she goes, a 2-bedroom? Oh, I don't know. It's like $400-$500.
Yeah.
What?
Well,
I could retire in Beloit right now.
I'm from the northwest suburbs, Chicago. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Get
Barrington,
out of
know that.
Lake Zurich. Yeah.
Barrington. Oh, I'm
exactly.
sorry.
I know. Well, yeah. I was actually in Lake Zurich. You're a Barrington guy?
Yeah.
There
he's
we go.
He's a loser. Don't,
and,
don't be excited about
and
that.
And we so I was looking around for different festivals that were somewhat near there because you know, one of my family that's out there to be able to see the movie.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're not getting a theatrical release.
Winnetka,
yeah.
Buffalo Grove.
Exactly. So
Buffalo
I found
Grove sometimes plays some.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they'll play like a movie out of nowhere here and there at the South Barrington 30.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. It's but for the most part, you got the big tentpole pictures that you know.
That's right.
They just have 85 showtimes of Despicable Me 2. You know, and so we went up to Beloit and it was really inspiring because the way they run their festival up there is that all of the local businesses house screenings.
Yeah.
So there'll be like screenings in the bagel shop. There'll be screenings over in the bank that's closed.
That's great.
I love
they're projecting it up on the wall.
It was real cinephile stuff.
Yeah.
They got the whole town involved. They have all these business owners. And that's how, you know, that was the first couple years of Sundance, was it was in the local. They said, we're not going to use the Cineplex. We're not going to show stuff in the movie theater. We'll show it at the Opera House or whatever,
but
not in any like established movie theater.
You've sold me on going to the Beloit Film Festival.
It was really cool, and I had a couple different kids come up and get DVDs from me, and they were saying thanks so much for coming. That's so cool, and that the fact that you came out and you actually supported it. Can we talk about
probably
the film?
Some
can
kid
we talk
from
about...
Janesville? Even he's not even from Beloit. He probably has drive down after picking up some salvia.
Right. And it's Wisconsin. Some fireworks.
Right. And
fireworks.
And
we
went
cheese
up,
at a gas station.
Yeah, we went
some
up
Stroh's and some wine and Kugel.
Some Stroh's and some wine.
Mars
Chippewa Falls. We went up to, that's what we did, we went up and scored M80s. That's what
that's
Wisconsin
right.
was for.
That's right.
But
and Indiana.
Wisconsin,
that's what Indiana's
yeah.
for, too.
Yeah.
And strip clubs.
Wisconsin's got, and Klan rallies.
Yeah.
Wisconsin got some pockets where it's very artistically adept people. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
So I think that's great, though, and that just proves my point, though. You got all these people showing up for screenings for your film
and
other films.
They're hungry for it. They're hungry for it. But, you know, the problem is, of course, it's only 1 week a year, you know?
Yeah.
So, I
think if the Landmark opened up one theater in fucking Lake Geneva, whatever big area they have to, Kenosha.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure if it was a 4 or 5 screen theater, they'd be selling movies out.
Or
listen, before midnight, I know it's L.A. once again in North Hollywood, but my screening for the Lamalee completely sold out. The whole crowd was into it. And by the way, I saw Before Midnight like 4 weeks after it came out.
Oh, no kidding.
So this was not like an opening weekend crowd getting their Ethan Hawke, Julie Delpy fix. It was... Four weeks later, packed at 9 p.m.
People were really responding.
It's out there, man.
Yeah,
it's out there. And I'm so hurt that we're forgetting about it.
Yeah.
Because we are.
Yeah. It's interesting to see. Like, I have a buddy who's in White House Down, so I went and saw that movie.
I'm sorry.
And it was like, I went in with extremely low expectations, so I was pleasantly surprised. But, it went in and like, it was deserted. It was just deserted.
Good.
There's no one in there.
Good.
And I'm thinking, you know, you could cut out just a couple of their show times and throw in a couple of movies that are maybe a little bit lower budget. And, you know, you could either make the same amount of money and give people an option, or who knows, maybe make a greater amount of money because you have some people that are going to be hungry for that thing that you're not giving them.
Rod Lurie, who I consider a friend, he is the director, Rod Lurie, The Contender, among other films.
Mm-hmm.
Good director. Good writer. Last Castle, but he made a comment that I completely disagree with, and it was about White House Down to a degree, where he said we shouldn't be, especially those in the business, and you know we consider ourselves in the business. Obviously, you a lot more than me, and Juan a lot more than me, but I'm in. So, but he says we should not be cheering for movies to fail. And listen, there's one part I get where it's like. For the 980 non-millionaires that are doing the movie, that are blue-collar guys and need to keep working and keep bringing home money for their wife and kids, yes, I'm not cheering for them to fail. What I'm cheering for is not for so much the movies to fail, but if it takes some big movies that suck failing to get smaller movies more attention and back into bigger theaters...
Then Tim Burr.
Yeah.
By the way, we should if you're going to say we should not be rooting for some movies to fail, that means that there are many more movies that we should be rooting for to succeed than just
a
select few.
Right. And I mean, you know, I get it. Rod was championing The Lone Ranger and Down, and you know, a lot of it I think was payola to a degree, as a lot of things out here are. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, we're not cheering from the fail. When I come on my show, and by the way, I want to be an actor. I want to be on TV. I want to be in movies. So I know it's not even politically a good idea for me to come on and bash a movie, but the fact of the matter is I'd rather see movies like Congratulations in theaters than White House Down, even though there's a place for White House Down, but at least make it a good movie.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah, I mean, I grew up loving Die Hard. I thought that was one of the most
I thought
fun
Olympus Has Fallen was 500 times better than White House.
Oh, really?
So,
I didn't see that.
And I feel like anyone that disagrees is full of their own shit. Because at least Olympus Has Fallen, for an action movie, it's rated R, it's got balls. Antoine Fuqua was just such a better director than Roland Emmerich. I mean, look, there's a place for Roland Emmerich. He's like the good guy that would have directed. He would have directed Sharknado if he wasn't good. Like these are his type of movies. But like, you know, you want to see a Congratulations. You want to see a Before Midnight. Before Midnight, Burbank 16 fucking theaters at that AMC.
Yeah.
Not one time did they show Before Midnight, which is the biggest indie hit of the year, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Way Back's not there. Why not?
Mud wasn't there.
Well, Mud was at the Burbank 8, which they also do own, so I'll give them that. But still, it's not. They could have had Mud in it for 3-4 weeks.
Right.
Great flick.
Yeah. And then you have Lone Ranger playing like 85 times in one day.
In 4 theaters.
Yeah.
And bombing.
Yeah.
And bombing doesn't even make any sense.
Did you go see that?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm putting that on. There is literally going to be a day this week where I'm going to see Grown Ups 2, Lone Ranger, and The Heat all like in a row.
There you go.
I'm hoping The Heat's decent enough that the other two are like.
You're saying it's a palate cleanse?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's going to be more like an enema.
Well, Lee, you know I haven't been in the theater in a few weeks.
I have
seen everything I like. So now it's time to go catch up on the things.
Well, 2 days ago, I was just at the theater for like the first time in 2 weeks, and I had never taken that much time between not seeing something. I go see something every other day.
Yeah.
And I didn't even go to an official movie. I went to the screening of the Pusher trilogy.
At
the New Beverly.
I guess the last thing I want to ask you about when it comes to congratulations, and we'll let you go, and we'll let you go continue to be successful on NCIS and with congratulations here, and hopefully you make more independent film.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a big deal.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, good. Since we're talking about all these great indie movies, what films inspired you, maybe not towards the storyline of Congratulations, maybe not towards the filming of Congratulations, but motivated you to make a Congratulations?
Right. I think that Mike Mohan's film, One Too Many Mornings, is an inspiration for Abby and I, for sure, because we knew him, and we knew the budget that he was working from, and that was definitely something. I know as far as theme and source and all that sort of stuff, all of us were, well, Abby and I specifically, were inspired by Blue Valentine. We really, really enjoyed.
We liked Blue Valentine.
Really enjoyed the character study of it, you know, and the time.
Michelle Williams, great actress.
Yeah, wonderful piece. And the time that they took to tell the story, they didn't push themselves to move forward as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I know Eric was really inspired by Chloe in the Afternoon, right? He loved that one.
And from the Six Moral Tales.
Yes, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. But I wouldn't say there was any like one specific film, but looking at certain independent films and saying thematically, this is what I really, really love was fantastic. Did you ever see the film How to Cheat?
No.
You should check that out. It's really good. Amber Seeley did it, and it's I must have been made for about $15,000, something like that. It was very small, but the story itself, no star names, obviously, but this thing was just a beautiful, beautiful story of a man finding himself and a woman finding themselves, and they're married in their mid-30s. So there's a number of really great films that inspired us, but no one, I think, that stands out.
Get this man a cinephile membership. He deserves it.
Yeah.
He deserves it. You know your films,
an
pal.
An honorary.
I'm impressed. Impressive. I'm impressed. I got to tell you, I'm so grateful you did the show. And by the way,
thanks for having me,
I mean this. You know I haven't bullshitted you at all. You are living, to me, the dream. You are getting paid to do the number one TV show on television.
I'm
so
very thankful for that.
You have a nice, like, mattress to fall back on. Yeah. And in your off season, you get to make films that you really love to make.
Yeah. I mean, it's
you are the luckiest man alive.
I count myself as so blessed and so fortunate. Because, you know, when I do go to NCIS, what's great about working on that show is
and
that
that's great too.
Is that when I'm there, you know, like you just create. You know, it's the same thing. It's that I might not be writing it and deciding what the content is, but while I'm delivering lines, my job is to be honest in the moment and live it.
And
you
have so much trailer time and
having
stuff
fun
too, that you can come up with stuff while you're working.
Yeah, and to be honest, like that set is run by a guy who sets sets the tone really well in Mark Harmon, and he, you know, not a lot of bullshit.
He's really
not a whole lot of
quarterback
bullshit. He's a good
on
guy.
That show. I really love hearing that because, to be honest with you, by the way, I meant to bring this up with Bruce, and I forgot. Mark Harmon, when he did The West Wing, I don't know if you remember that.
He directed some episodes, too.
And he did that recurring role where he played Allison Janney's love interest for a while, and he was Secret Service. That, like, relaunched his career on TV after Chicago Hope.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it's great seeing a good guy like Mark Harmon just really make it. I mean, I mean that.
He's killing it, man. I mean, look at what he's doing.
We need more people,
though,
like Mark Harmon making it.
Some
other people.
He's been a wonderful, like, guy to help guide along, you know, as well. Like, I go to him for advice on certain things. He gave me the best piece of advice I've ever had in my life when it comes to my career. And he said, come to work and come to NCIS, do your job, enjoy it, you know, do the best that you can, and make your career about what you do when you're not on the set. Because he knew that basically on NCIS, it's not going to be like a fame canon where it's like, oh, my gosh, that number eight guy on NCIS is, you know, we have to put him in our movies. He said, use what you have here, you know, like be smart about it and enjoy what you do here, do a good job. But make your career about everything else. I mean, like, when you're not here, work your butt off.
How much for your career when you're not here? When he says that, outside of making this film, congratulations, July 30th, on demand everywhere, outside of doing that, is he talking about networking? Is he talking about going to the parties and stuff?
I think,
I take it you're not too much of a Hollywood guy either.
No, I mean,
so
I got two kids. I'm
do
old.
Do you force yourself to go to those kind of things, though? Do you get assertive? What
absolutely.
Do you do?
Absolutely, you have to. You have to
something
go
I'm
people.
Learning. Well, we've talked about this on the show before. Like, we sat next to David Mamet at a premiere that we went to, and I have a lot of friends that are mutual friends. Very easy for me to have said hello, David, and blah blah blah. Joe Mantegna, right there, Mike Finder, whatever.
Right.
And I did not. I couldn't do it. I couldn't.
You
I
didn't.
I've not learned
we
how
both
to be
did.
Assertive yet.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this last night because I've been doing this show out here, and I mean, you know, we're doing our thing and it's going well. And we have a fan base, and I'm proud of it, but it's been 2 years, and, like, I'm ready for the next step. And I feel like if I've been more assertive, or maybe if some of these people out here who I considered friends, who may not actually be friends, they just may be acquaintances, I just may be too nice. Maybe I'm being too nice.
You're Midwest.
Do you think that, though? Do you think that, because you're a Midwest guy.
Yeah.
It's funny you say, because you're Midwest. True. Were you a Midwest guy when you came out here, and in order to get to where you are, did you have to step up the aggression a little bit?
Oh, no, not at all.
No.
No, not for me.
So you just got blessed and lucky.
No,
and
I think, I think honestly, it's just about being truthful with yourself. And you. For me, like, breaking into the business, ignorance was bliss.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know I wasn't supposed to write a bunch of people and say, bring me into your room anytime, and I'll show you a scene that'll blow you away. Like writing casting directors.
Yeah.
Just unsolicited, just in
that's
envelope.
What you did?
Yeah, I mean, and that's how I got my first audition from Patrick Rush, who put me on I got a series regular role from him, my first audition.
Wow.
For TV, and I moved up to Canada for
a
year.
And all you did was you wrote a letter and you said, bring me in, I'll blow you away.
Yeah, and I'm like, it was a better letter than that. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, right. It was a two-sentence letter. Bring you in, I'll blow you
just
away.
Do it.
And thank God you said away after
yeah,
you.
Right.
Because you just never know.
You
probably would have gotten a bigger role if you didn't put in away.
Yeah,
afterwards.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I got a big budget role in Emmerich for you.
It might have been a different project you were in, though.
Right. Exactly. I don't think that would have made the networks. I think that it was ignorance was bliss. Like, I didn't know what the rules were. So, I mean, at that party, you don't know the rules. You're supposed to not walk up and say hi to David Mamet. Like,
right.
Just be like,
see,
forget
now
the
I'm
rules.
Fucked.
Just be a nice guy and go up and go, hey, how you doing? You
I
know
was
what I mean?
Way
like,
happier out here a year ago when I was naive and like,
I know.
Stupid.
Yeah.
You gotta just be stupid sometimes and just say, hey, I'm a person, you're a person, let's hang out. Hey, do you want to make a movie?
Do you think a lot of these actors that you meet out here who everyone's like, man, he's fucking stupid, do you think like they play dumb?
Oh, yeah.
Some of them?
I think
so. Do you think some actors out here just really play stupid?
Well, I think certain actors, you know, are nice people all the time because they don't want anyone to dislike them.
And not even just nice people, but, like, I've met actors where you're like, it's like a blank slate,
sure.
Right? And I'm like, you can't be that dumb.
Well, no, people are dumb.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, some of them are that dumb.
So that is true. There are
people
who
are stupid.
Like if you cover their heads, like if you threw a tarp on them, they just go completely docile.
All right. I guess maybe there's
and
a few.
I think there are. There's a certain amount of insanity with a certain amount of talent. So, maybe, you know, sometimes people who are crazy talented, you're like, how do you survive outside of this set? Because you're a nuts person, but I love watching you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
well, that's why I'm like, I can't believe some of these people are dumb when their acting's pretty outstanding.
Yeah, and who knows? So, they get it all out on set.
Oh, actors. Brian Dietzen, thank you so much.
Thank you very
much
for having me.
I appreciate it. At 603 North Hollywood Way, Tay, Chicago. Joe Montaigne sends his love, and Joe also sends his love if you come by and have a mini deep dish.
He really sends his love back.
Yeah, because there is love in that deep dish.
Yeah.
It is. You feel it, and you taste it, and it's in there.
The cook writes a poem to every pizza he puts in the oven.
I'm about to have the chopped salad.
Okay.
I'm about to really live it up, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brian Dietzen, thank you very much. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys.
All over Video On Demand, July 30th. You can catch it on iTunes, Amazon, Vudu, Cinema Now, PS3, Xbox. Look at that. I am rattling them
off. Nice memory.
Coming to a time-wasting video game device
and,
near you.
And by the way, we want to send our love to Abby Miller as well, co-writer of the film. And she's been a guest
friend
on the
show,
who I love. Thank you so much, Brian. Good luck with NCIS this year.
Thank you, man. Fantastic.
Thank you.
And we will be back next week with an all-new show. I believe David Koechner is going to be on next Wednesday.
Great.
If I can get some recording equipment. And David will be in
live
at Taste Chicago Live. And I believe if I can get my computer
champ
back,
kind.
I will be hanging out with the other champ kind, Jeff Garland, on Friday.
Uh-huh.
And the real, who champ kind's based off of. Oh, that interview just got canceled. No. That was too good. It was too witty. They wouldn't know what to do with that one.
Right.
But I will be seeing Garland this week as well. And I'm hearing there may be some more surprises in store. It's going to be a busy month here.
You never know who will drop in.
That's right. And I'm now going to have Miss Comic-Con, which I'm deeply upset about, but whatever. Caesar Marconi, thank you very much for using your computer today, and you did a fine job staring at things. If you could press end episode, and we'll head out.
That's good. I apologize to the city of Pocatello, Idaho.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.